chapter 4, verse 18. And I think it was a very heavy verse. Surprised to see all of you back here again. That's why you're back. Okay, good. At least you all don't give up. Still ready. Okay. It's a very heavy verse. Okay, so basically we discuss it from two angles. One was the philosophical angle and one was the practical angle. In the philosophical angle, if you look at it, to understand it better, we take the example of a light bulb and a filament, and there is electricity. So this is the light bulb. And there is a filament. And there is electricity. So how do we relate this to our life? When the light bulb represents our perishable body, and the electricity represents the Atman, and the filament would represent therefore the mind and intellect. Now, one thing we must note, that the light bulb by itself cannot function, cannot illumine, unless the electricity also cannot illumine the bulb unless the filament is functioning, correct? So, similarly, when Atman is all pervading, is everywhere, right? But when the body is there, when the time the body is dead, Atman is there, isn't it? Consciousness is, we say, all pervading. Why doesn't the body move? Why doesn't the body move? We cannot say Atman has left, because what was the first statement? Atman is all pervading, right? So it's like we are saying space has moved. We say, I'm taking space from here and putting it outside. Can space move? So, can Atman move? Therefore, if body is there, consciousness is all pervading, how come the body is not functioning? Mind are not there. So, when we say, what travels, it is not Atman that travels, because Atman is all pervading. Body cannot travel because we have cremated the body, right? So what travels? It is the filament or the mind intellect, which is known as the Sukshma Sharira. Sukshma Sharira. And the body is known as the Stula Sharira. Stula merely means gross, and Sukshma means subtle. In fact, there are two bodies here. There is subtle and there is a causal body. Causal body contains all the consonants. Now, when the mind, or rather when the filament is energized by electricity, the bulb can function, it can illumine, right? Similarly, when the body is there, but the mind intellect has left the body, even though Atman is there, it cannot function, it cannot illumine. So why is it that the mind intellect, the subtle and the causal body, why is it has to travel? What's the reason? Why should it leave the body and travel? Yes, so why should it leave? It still has karmas to burn. The karmas which are in the causal body, the Sanskrit word is called karana sharira. Karana means, Malay word, karana, cause. There is a cause for rebirth. So why is there a cause for rebirth? Because we accumulate punyam papam in this birth. When we do actions, it's not the actions that create the karma. What is it that creates the karma? What is it that creates? It's not action that creates punyam papam. What creates punyam papam? Attachment to action. It is the mind's attachment to action that creates punyam papam. So if we just go back to chapter 3, verse number 27, page 71, you can see what I'm talking about here. Chapter 3, verse 27, page 71. Do you have a book? Can somebody just share with me? Have you got any extra books here? Or just try to share, okay, with somebody. Okay, chapter 3, verse 27. you have an extra book. Okay, thanks. If you look at the fourth line, Karta aham iti manyate. Manyate means thinks or considers. Page 71. Okay. Chapter 3, verse 27. So here, we are given the very reason why there is continuous rebirth. So the last line says, in Sanskrit, you see that Karta aham iti manyate. Manyate means one accepts, one thinks that aham, I am the karta, I am the doer. And Krishna says such a person who thinks that I am doing everything, what is that person called? In the third line he puts there, ahamkara vimudatma. That person is a vimudatma, is a deluded person, ignorant person, and he is the ahamkar. This ahamkar, which we have constantly heard this word, ahamkar, we translate it simply as ego. What do we mean by ego? What is this ego? Ego is nothing but this mind intellect which has been energized by the Atman. Okay? When the mind intellect comes alive, energized by Atman, it says, I am the body. Ahamkara, ego means nothing but identification with the body. You forget about your real identity, which is Atman. You forget about this. You only say, I am this body. I am this mind. Therefore, when you have this kind of attitude, what do you think? I am doing all the actions. But actually, who are you? Who are you? In reality, who are you? You are Atman. Does Atman do any actions? So what is Atman then? What is the role of Atman in our lives? It's a witness. Atman plays only two roles. One is it is a witness, and one is it is the consciousness. It provides all the life energy to the body. Can the body and the mind also act? Actually, body, mind is carrying out all the actions under what influence? If Atman is only a witness, then why does the body act? Why does? Because of the gunas. So here, if you look at this verse 27, same thing it says. All kinds of actions are caused and done by the modes of nature, gunaha. Modes of nature means gunaha. The three gunas, sattvic, rajasic, tamasic, which are where? These gunas are in body-mind complex. They are not in Atman. They are in body-mind complex. They are the ones who cause you to think. The way you think, the way you act, the way you speak is due to the three gunas, which we have discussed, and in chapter 14 we will discuss in detail. Therefore, in short, if you have the reason you are here is because of what? Which guna? Sattvic guna. If you had rajasic gunas and tamasic gunas, you will be somewhere else. Right? Just a simple example I'm giving you. Therefore, when the ego says, I am the doer, actually who is the doer? Is it the body? Is it the mind? Is it the atma?
So who is the doer? It's the gunas which are the doer. Now, when we accept that we are doing it, we get entangled in the action. Once we get entangled in the action, we create punyam and papam. Once there is punyam and papam, there is punarapi jananam, punarapi maranam. So, the body is cremated. Consciousness cannot travel. So, what happens now? The filament here travels to take another light bulb. The same filament travels here. Another new body is provided for you, depending on what type of karmas you have. That right appropriate body environment will be provided for you to carry out your punyam and papam. So whatever punyam you have, you will enjoy sukham. Whatever pleasure you are enjoying now is because of your punyam. Whatever dukham you are suffering now is because of your papam. A proper, appropriate body environment, family has got to be given to you to exhaust this punyam papam. Okay. Now the question is, how do I stop this punyam papam? Because that is a goal of a spiritual seeker, right? Moksha. Moksha means I don't want punarapi jananam, punarapi maranam. How do I stop it?
No attachment.
No attachment to the action. Once, how do I stop this attachment to the action? So, our action need to be changed? Does our action need to be changed?
No.
No. What needs to be changed?
Attitude.
What should the attitude be? So our attitude be, mind must be attached to God, body must carry out the action. So now we look at this verse now in chapter 4, verse number 18. When Krishna says, one who sees in action, and one who sees action in action, such a person is wise. Now therefore, what is inaction? Inaction. Huh? Body is doing action, right? Where is the inaction? Mind is attached to God, that is inaction, inaction. Okay? Body is doing all actions, but mind is attached to God. That means there is total detachment. Okay? So who am I? I am the Atman, I am the witness, I am the consciousness. My mind is attached to God. Body functions because of the gunas. Let it carry on. Whatever the gunas, let it carry on. Whatever my karmas, let it carry on. Therefore I don't change the action, I change my attitude. It is called inaction, inaction. And action in inaction, when the body is at rest, when we are meditating, maybe we are reading the scriptures, it looks as though we are not doing anything. Where should the mind be? Also attached to God. So, action in inaction. So, whether we are active or whether we are inactive, inactive meaning the body is not physically doing action, not running around doing things, mind is still attached to God. We are reading the scriptures, we are not doing any action, but mind is attached to God. And when we are looking after the family, going to work, etc., doing action, where is the mind? In action, attached to God. You see? So, that means our attitude alone is very important. When the attitude changes, what happens to new karmas? You don't create any more new karmas. When you don't create any more new karmas, where is the question of punyam papam? When there is no punyam papam, where is the question of punarapi jananam, punarapi maranam? You have stopped that cycle of birth and death. So you understand now clearly what it means by inaction, inaction, and action in inaction. Okay? So simple practical example is the life of saints and sages, Ramakrishna Paramahansa. Swami Ramana Maharishi, Adi Sankaracharya, so many great people, they contributed to the masses, they contributed to the world, they carried on their action, but their mind was totally engaged, immersed in God. Another beautiful example of inaction, Lord Krishna on the battlefield. He did everything, whatever his duty. Arjuna asked him to be the charioteer. He was a charioteer. So one hand he is a charioteer, he is taking instructions from Arjuna, he is doing all his duties. What is the other hand doing? What is the other hand doing? You seen the famous beautiful picture. Krishna's one hand on the reins of the chariot. The other hand saying hi, bye bye. What? What is he doing? What is this? What is this stand for? Chin mudra. What is the chin mudra mean? Correct. This is the body, mind, equipment, body, mind, intellect. This stands for the jiva. Jiva separates from the body, mind, intellect and attaches to the God or Brahman. So, what is our spiritual process? Detach, attach. Detach, attach. Correct? That is what chin mudra is. And it represents jnana yoga because Krishna is giving us this very knowledge through this very symbol. Understand? Jnana yoga is detach, attach. But we are also now doing detach, attach. How are we doing it? We detach from God and attach back to the body. We are doing it the other way around. We have to do it this way around. We are doing it the other way around. So, that is inaction, inaction. Krishna is doing his action, but mind is at peace. And what happens when you surrender every action to God? What happens? What happens when you surrender every action? When I say every action means not necessarily only I'm going for prayers, I'm going to temple, that is called pure action. Through my every daily action, I'm serving, I'm looking after my house. Whose house is it? It is God's house. Lord, I'm taking care of your house. If I go to work, who am I working for? God. I see everybody as all my colleagues, all my friends, all my relatives as but a reflection of that God. So I am serving. What happens when we can adopt this attitude 24/7? What happens? When you surrender everything to God, what happens? There is no disappointments. Anything happens, you say, thank you God. There is something for me to learn from this. If it's an unfavorable situation, you meet unfavorable people in life, thank you Lord, there is something you have sent to me for me to learn. If there is something favorable, thank you Lord that you have given me this favorable condition. So everything I learn, I program myself to thank God. Every experience, I only can see God in that experience, in that person. My mind is not disturbed, my mind is not agitated. And because of that, there is no punyam papam. The minute there is agitation, there is disturbance, there is anger, then all the punyam papam accumulates. So perhaps the most beautiful sentence to describe the state of a devotee whose mind is totally surrendered to God is in the very first chapter, chapter 1, verse 1, the very first line of the Gita. The very first word that opens the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 1, verse 1. Dharma Chetre, Guru Chetre. Right? What is Dharma Chetre, Guru Chetre? Such a beautiful two words, but such a deep meaning. What is Guru Chetre? What is Guru Chetre? Chetre is land. It belonged to the King Kuru, therefore it was called Kuru Chetre. Chetre is a piece of land. It belonged to King Kuru, so it's called Kuru Chetre, where the battle of Mahabharata was happening. But let us understand in practicality, what does it mean to us? Okay, the battle happened there, so what? So what it happened in Kuru Chetre? Right now I'm in Patalinjaya. So what is Kuru Chetre mean to me?
Our own battle in life.
So, Kuru means action. Kshetre is field. What is the field of action?
The righteous field of
action. What do you mean by field of action?
The world.
The whole world is nothing but a field of action, isn't it? Every human being, animal, plant has got to do continuous action to live. Even if you don't want to do anything at all, minimum you still have to eat and drink water to survive and to sleep. So, we all have to engage in action. This whole world is called a Kuru Kshetra. Our entire life from birth to death is nothing but Kuru Kshetra. Field of action. But then comes in the other beautiful word. Dharma Kshetra.
Righteous.
Righteousness. So, what is our mission as a spiritual aspirant? We are doing all actions. Gita never says stop your action. Krishna never says stop your action. What does he tell you? Kuru Kshetra, your field of actions, convert them to Dharma Kshetra. Turn every action into a worship of God. Turn every Kuru Kshetra into a Dharma Kshetra. So every action becomes dharmic. As long as your action is dharmic, it is based on dharma, whatever money you earn, whatever desires you satisfy, whatever you do in life, you will never incur any punyam papa. And the only way to do that is in action. Dedicate your mind straight to God. Immerse your mind in God. And carry out your duties. There is nothing to fear. There is nothing, there is no agitation, there is no disturbance in your mind. There is no greed, there is no anger, there is no envy. Because you look at everything as but a projection of God. The whole world is nothing but projection of God. Right? So the mind is calm. In action and action in inaction. So Krishna says, one who can understand this philosophy, one who can apply this philosophy in life, what is that person? In the third line of verse 18, Sa buddhiman manusheshu. Among all the manushyas, among all the human beings, only such a person deserves to be called a buddhiman. Buddhiman means one who uses his or her intellect, buddhi. Such a person only deserves to be called a person of intelligence because he has mastered the facts of life. He has mastered what is life all about. That this life, this human form given to you is not for eating, drinking, sleeping, mating and working. There is much more. There is a higher possibility for this human life. To worship God, to attain God only in this human life. So one who has recognized this, one who has understood this, such a person is a buddhiman. And not only that, the last line in verse 18, Saha Yukta. Saha means that person is Yuktaha. Yuktaha means only that person can be called an integrated person. What do you mean by integrated person? What he thinks is what he speaks is what he does. So his actions, his thoughts and his words are all aligned. Otherwise nowadays people think one thing, say another thing and do something else. So this is a person who is integrated, a disciplined person in life. Saha yuktaha. There are no doubts, there are no confusion. He is very clear about his directions in life. And not only he is clear, but he makes sure all his actions are in accordance to his thoughts. So he accepts that I am Atma. I am the consciousness and he puts it into practice also. Saha Yukta. And also Saha Krishna Karma Krit. That's what he says here in the fourth line of verse 18. Saha, such a person is a Krishna Karma Krit. Means one who has accomplished all his actions. Now the question is, what do you mean by accomplish all your actions? He's doing actions. He says accomplish all his actions. That means this is not a person who is sitting down in the caves and meditating, one who has left society and sitting in ashram. He says he has accomplished all actions. So he or she is doing action. What do you mean by accomplish all actions?
Realize.
Huh? So what do you mean by complete all action? The one who has accomplished all actions. He does all he needs to do. So how is he accomplished? He still has some more things to do, isn't it? His actions don't end. He has continuously is performing actions, but yet it says here he's accomplished all his actions.
Doesn't accumulate any more karma.
Through, that's true.
The attitude that he's doing with the actions.
Right. Why do all of you do any actions? What? Survive? Why do all, okay, you survive. Why do you survive? For what purpose? Why do you want to burn the karma? Why do all of us do any action? Only two reasons. There are only two reasons why all of us do actions. That's what the scriptures also say. One is sukham prapti. You want to attain some happiness. I drive all the way to Baskin Robbins. Why? I eat ice cream. Why do I want to eat ice cream? I want to be happy. Right? Sukham prapti. Second reason why any of us do any actions?
Desire
to attain happiness and? Sorry? Correct, happiness. So whatever it is, after ice cream you go for maybe chocolate cake or you go here, go there, wherever, whatever it is, you want to be happy. Yeah, you want to be happy. What else? Sukham prapti and dukham nivritti, to run away from adverse or unhappiness, right? That's only reason generally most of us perform on action. Either to attain happiness or to run away from something. I don't like this person, I avoid him. Isn't it? But this person who is an accomplished person, sa buddhiman, he doesn't need to attain any happiness. Why?
Because happiness is from within.
He has discovered the Atman, the consciousness, the happiness within. He has nothing to accomplish through his actions. Yet he acts. Why does he act? He is not acting because of his happiness or to run away from some, like, you know, we want to run away from our problems. So what do? The most easier solution. Take up sannyas. Good orange robe will sit in the ashram. Rama, 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 Holy Rama. Where is the mind? Mind is in kama, 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 in action, in desires. So, this person has nothing to accomplish. He is happy already. He has reached that ultimate happiness. He has nothing to run away from. Nothing causes him sorrow. So, why does he act? What is the reason he functions? What is the reason he acts? For the good of others. And if you look at chapter 5 verse 11, you will get the answer. Page 104. Chapter 5 verse 11, page 104. The karma yogis, meaning those who perform selfless action, they perform with their senses, their mind, the intellect, the body. They perform every action, whatever their duties they do, they don't run away from their duties. And shaking off attachment for the sake of self-purification. That means every action I do is not for my happiness, is not for my to run away from sorrow. It is not for my selfish needs. It is only one, my only one goal in life is by serving my family, by going to work, whatever I do, my only one goal in life is what? Self-purification. And when we say self, we are not talking about the Atman, because why? Atman is already pure. You cannot purify the Atman. So what do you mean by self-purification? It's a mind. When we are talking about self here, self means a mind. I need to purify my mind. So, this verse, that's why it's a very deep verse. Even by explaining to you 10 times, so you're not going to understand. But I would just request you to keep on reading, reading, eventually that knowledge will come to you. So, Saha Yukta Saha Krishna Karmakri. Okay. So, after this, now Krishna has more or less completed his discussion about this knowledge, how this knowledge should guide us in performing all our duties. Now, what happens when we have this knowledge, when we want to apply this knowledge? So, in verses 19 to 23, from verses 19 to 23, Krishna will say, you can take two different type of lifestyles. When you have this knowledge, there are two possible lifestyles. One is, you can remain as a householder, you don't have to take sannyas, you can remain as a householder, just change your attitude to action and perform all your duties with that right attitude. And that householder life is given to us in verses 19, 20, 22 and 23. 19, 20, 22 and 23. The second possibility is you can leave the household, you can take up ashram life, you can take up sannyas. How you should live also, that is given to us in verse number 21. So 21 is a sannyasi's life, the other verses refer to a householder's life. So that means what Krishna is telling us here is that it is not necessary for you to go and take up sannyas. Because if you have purified your mind, you can remain where you are and still reach moksha. But if you want to take sannyas, it is also an option for you also. Okay? So now, we come to verse number 19. Now, in any action that we perform, whatever action that we perform, there are two very important components of action that we must be very aware of. One is the motive. What is the motive of my action? Motive is very important. Because you could be doing a good action, as I have explained to you before, you could be giving danam, but if your motive is of ego, then that makes the action not karma yoga. It doesn't become selfless action. You may be doing a good action, but if your motive is out of ego, out of pride, then that does not become karma yoga. So motive is very important, number one. Number two, what is the second aspect of action that we must be always aware of? One is motive and the result will come, isn't it? The result, the karma phalam will come, whether favorable or unfavorable, it will come. What should be my attitude about the result?
You shouldn't have the expectation of the result.
So how do I treat the result?
Surrender it to God.
So, correct. It is prasadam from God. Every action I do is an offering to God. Therefore, every result I accept as prasadam. Just like we go to temple, we pray to God, we offer flowers to God, then the priest gives you some prasadam. Whatever the prasadam, we accept as prasadam. So, every result happens, I accept it from God as his prasadam. And can anybody reject prasadam? Then we say, I don't want the prasadam. No, we cannot. So whether favorable or unfavorable, I accept it. When my attitude of acceptance as every result is prasadam, then my life is a perfect karma yoga life. That is what we call a karma yoga life. So here in this verse number 20, number 19, Krishna says here that now, when we can adopt this kind of attitude, if you fail, let's say you do any action and you fail, and you have belief in God, you have surrendered everything to God, and you do an action, it does not mean the action will be successful just because you have surrendered to God. According to your karma, you might still fail, but you won't get rejected. You accept it and you move on. You have the capacity to move on. And if you succeed and you have belief in God, what happens? You do an action and you get success, but you have belief in God. You surrendered everything to God and you got success. What happens? What is your benefit? If you fail, you don't get rejected. If you succeed, don't get arrogant. You don't get arrogant. You don't get proud because you are so surrendered to that. Thank you, God, for giving me this, making it successful. You don't take that upon yourself. So prayer saves you from depression, right? From getting dejected. That's what prayer does. It helps you. It gives you support in terms of unfavorable conditions. And prayer stops you from becoming arrogant also. So in both ways, your mind remains stable. Neither do you get depressed, neither do you get elated or arrogant. Okay? So, here now in this verse, Krishna is talking about such a person. That's why if you look at verse number 19, the second line is a Sanskrit word there. Kama Sankalpa Varjita. Kama Sankalpa Varjita. Varjita means one who has won over or one who has subdued what? Kama, desire, and Sankalpa. Sankalpa means our projection for the future. Because our mind is whatever actions we do, we have already projected what we want already. The outcome is already projected by us. Sankalpa. So Krishna says these are the two things you have to watch out. One is your karma, your desire. And the second is our constantly our mind projecting in future. Why? Because of nothing but the ego. The ego always wants some outcome. Okay? Ego is a very difficult thing to conquer. I give you a very simple example. All of us have ego. We admit it, we all have ego, right? Ego is the one always projecting in future what is going to happen, what do I get. Now, I'll give you a simple example. Supposing at the end of this talk, I tell you that I have two statues with me to give away to everybody. One is the statue of Lord Rama, beautiful statue of Lord Rama. Another is a beautiful statue of Ravan. So one beautiful statue of Rama, one beautiful statue of, you all know who's Ravan, right? So after the talk, you can choose either one, not both, either one. So which one will all of you choose? Ravan.
I will choose Ravan.
You choose Ravan.
No, why? Because I will just say that I do not want to become again.
Oh, okay.
For that reason. You know, it reminds me,
but then you should also choose Rama because you want to become like him.
I don't become like him.
So all of you will choose Rama, right? Okay. Now see how the ego works, sir. If I tell you the statue of Rama is made of wood and the statue of Ravan is made of 24 karat gold. Now which one will you do? You see how the ego works? Right? When there's 24 karat gold, oh, then never mind, Ravan, no problem. So such is the nature of ego, such is the nature of projecting forward. This is what I want, this is what is in it for me. So kama sankalpa varjita. Varjita means to win over both kama and desire and what we call sankalpa, projection. Now, here again we must look at one very important thing. See, the thing is, from the past births, we perform many, many actions, right? In so many past births, we have performed countless of actions. What is the result of these actions? What do these actions, what is the result of these actions? Karmas, we have created karmas, right? So many, over how many lifetimes, we have created tons and tons of karmas. And what is the result of these karmas that we create? Before we were. What is the result of these karmas? Earlier I talked about the remember the karana shariram, the causal body? right? Yeah. It creates what we call as vasanas, which are embedded in your karana sharira, in your causal body. Now, this is past birth. Now, when you take the current birth, what happens to these vasanas now? You carry forward into this life. So, what happens now? How does it affect you? How does this vasanas you carry forward from so many births by doing so many actions, they are imprints, vasanas, excuse me, are imprints in your mind. How does it affect you now in this life? Before gunas. Control. What are control?
Mind makes thing in a regular way.
Your very thoughts right now, as you are born and as you are growing up, also doing action, they are also a result of the past actions you have done. That is the vasanas you already carry. You have a certain thought pattern already, right? And because of these thoughts, what happens? Depending on these thoughts, what's the next stage? Before actions? The type of desires you have is based on the thoughts that your mind has, whether good thoughts or bad thoughts. That will be an expression of your desires. And based on these desires, you will perform all types of action. Okay? Now, the question is, if my thoughts are wrong or not good, my desires will not be good, my actions also will not be good. So how do I get out of this cycle? I want to get out of this cycle. What do I do? How do I change? Okay. So we have three equipments with us, right? First equipment we have is the intellect. So first with intellect I gain right knowledge. What happens when I gain the right knowledge? The quality of my thoughts change, isn't it? The quality of my thoughts change. Where there is arrogance, there's pride, there's ego, there's envy, there's jealousy. When I understand what is right action, through right knowledge I understand, the quality of my thoughts changes. And what does the intellect control? Chapter 3. Only what? Revision class here.
Mind.
Intellect controls the mind. So when my thoughts change, the quality of my thoughts changes, what happens? The mind changes, the quality of my desires also changes, isn't it? So when the quality of my thoughts change, the quality of my desires change, mind controls your actions also change. Therefore, if you look at it, the mind is at the center. There is two ways to control the mind. One is inner, one is outer. Inner way of control of mind is through the intellect, gain knowledge, through the process of jnana yoga and discipline the mind. The second is what we discussed in chapter 2 and chapter 3. Through your senses, what do we do with the senses? What happens when you control the senses? Eyes, nose, ears, what happens when you control the senses? The senses are a gateway to your mind. When you discipline your senses, you don't end up throwing more garbage into your mind, isn't it? Because your mind is already filled with all the wrong thoughts, wrong desires. So that's why Krishna has got two disciplines you must practice. One is from jnana yoga, strengthen your intellect, so intellect will guide the mind, and at the same time discipline your senses so you don't keep on throwing more garbage into your mind. So here that's why he says this constant projection of the ego, which is working from the mind, constantly projecting what will happen, what will I get from this constant sankalpa, must be controlled two ways, one through the intellect and one through the senses. One external, one internal. Mind becomes disciplined. Therefore, when the mind is disciplined, and that's why in the next verse, he uses the very, the third line, if you see the verse number 19, jnana, agni, there are four words there, jnana, beautiful word, jnana, agni, jnana is what?
Knowledge.
Agni is what?
Fire.
Fire of knowledge. Control this wandering nature, because the mind has got a wandering nature, control it through knowledge, through the intellect. Sharpen your intellect. When you have a strong intellect, through the fire of knowledge, it will control your mind. And the very word fire here indicates what? When your intellect controls your mind, your actions become correct, meaning what? There is no more punyam papa. This fire of knowledge will burn away all your punyam papa. Just like the example I had given you earlier of the roasted seed. The normal seed can germinate. When we roast a seed, the seed loses its capacity to germinate. So fire of knowledge roasts all our actions to what we call to ashes. So that's why he uses a beautiful word. Jnana agni dagda karmana. The person, karmana, who does all his actions with knowledge, all his actions are burnt in the fire of knowledge. The ego is now under control. So you have no more punyam and papam accumulated. And then Krishna also says, tam ahu panditam buddha. Such a person, only such a person can be called a pandita. Pandita means not a pandit, doesn't mean one who performs rituals and prayers. But a pandita means one who has conquered his desires, one through knowledge has conquered his mind and disciplined his senses, such a person can be called a pandita. So a pandita can be one who is also a householder, living in the household environment, having his senses under control, having gained spiritual knowledge through the intellect, leads a disciplined life. Such a person is called a pandita. By who? Even the wise people, the Buddha. Buddha means a wise people, called such a man as a pandita. So even the sages and saints will call a householder like this a pandita. So what he's telling you here basically is, you don't have to leave your household, you can remain in your household, have a discipline on your senses and your mind, and lead a integrated life. Now, the next verse, also 20 here, also Krishna will speak about a householder. So the problem is not with whether you do action. As a householder, you get many duties, you have many actions to do, right? Or if you go to an ashram, you may have very little activities to do. The problem is not whether you do action or don't do action. The problem is internal with the mind. That is what we have to understand. And as long as you don't solve this problem in your mind, even if you go to an ashram also, it will still create a problem for you. So most important is how to bring this mind under control. Okay. So now we come to verse number 20. In verse number 20, here Krishna will talk about, see here what Krishna is talking about, a jnani, a realized person, the one who has attained this knowledge and is applying this knowledge. So what is the journey of such a jnani who has acquired this knowledge? And here again we are talking about a grihas, what we call a householder. Yes. Grihas means a householder. Okay, so here what does Krishna say? He says, karman, in the third line you see, karmani abhi pravritopi. even though this grihast, this householder, is engaged in all his duties, all his responsibilities in the family, all social obligations. We have so many social obligations to fulfill. There's family obligations, relatives are there, friends are there. Sometimes it's difficult. We want to be on the spiritual path, but there are social obligations also. But what is most important here, he says, what is the state of his mind? So what should be the state of his mind? In the second line of verse 20, Nitya tripto nirashrayaha. Nitya means constantly. In whatever situation you find yourself, because not necessarily you're going to have favorable situation, there will be unfavorable. All kinds of relatives problems, friend problems, business problems, all kinds of problems. In fact, anger here is one of the most difficult problems all of us face, isn't it? Right? But many people don't want to admit, I lose my temper. So how many people say that they've lost their anger at one time or the other? Either, yeah, even I'm putting out my hand. He's putting out two hands. We all have. Whether we have said some words, whether we have thought even something angry about somebody, right? And of course the extreme, maybe we go on and hit somebody also, or thrown something at somebody. And anger, all of us face this problem, through, because whatever our situation we have to encounter. Now, how many of you accept that anger is beyond your control, that it arises, you can't do anything about it. You have to express it. How many of you believe that? Anger is within you, right? We find it difficult to control, right? I am unable to control, that's why I have to express it, right? So how many of you believe that anger arises spontaneously without your control, without your wanting? You don't want to say the words, right? You don't want to say the words, but you say it anyway. So have you got a control over your anger?
Sometimes you
want to act angry. No, that's different. But yeah, this is spontaneous. I'm talking about spontaneous. We get angry, we not necessarily we want to get angry, but we do things and then what do we say later? We regret it, right? So how many of you say it arises spontaneously? That means you have almost no control over your anger, right? Now, let me give you a scenario. Let me explain something to you that you actually have a control over your anger. Why? I'll tell you why. All of us, most of us maybe have worked sometime or the other for somebody, right? You have a boss, you have worked, or maybe now you're working for somebody, okay? Now, let's say you're sitting down and doing your work and you've done nothing wrong, you're doing your work. And your boss comes and he probably had a fight in his house with his wife. He's already in a bad mood. Come to the office, suddenly find there's an income tax raid in the office. Another bad mood again. Financial problems. And he comes and you are the first person he sees. And he starts shouting at you. Okay? And you, for the last 2 years you were jobless, you couldn't find a job. This was the first job you had. Your bank balance is almost empty. You can't pay your car bill. You can't pay your house loan. This is the first job you have. Now your boss comes and in front of all the colleagues, he shouts at you. What happens to you inside?
Boss is always right.
Rule number one, rule number two. What is rule number one? Rule number two?
Refer to
rule number one. So what do? You get angry, right? Right? But what do? You keep quiet. So are you in control of your anger?
Yes.
You can be in control of your anger if you want to. But we have this policy that we cannot control our anger. Okay, now wait. Now we take the same person, he goes back home. Okay? He's been shouted at by his boss, he has suppressed his anger. Now, he's watching TV, and he's concentrating on some news program. Children start jumping up, shouting, he can't hear the TV. What does he do? He shouts at his children, he expresses his anger at his children, he may even, right? Now,
In one situation, he could not control anger. In another situation, he let go his anger. So, are you really in control or not in control of your anger? You can be in control if you want to. What is the problem?
You cannot suppress it. If you suppress, it is getting affected.
Correct. So, what do you do? When next anger arises, what do you do? There is a very fine line between us when the anger arises and the time we express the anger. There is always a kind of a period, right? If your thinking, your realization kicks in, you are able to analyze that anger and hold that anger, after a while what happens to the anger? Subsides. So, every time when that thought of anger arises, we should have that gap of time. We should not express. Whenever the anger arises, we must remind ourselves, don't say anything, don't do anything. Give it time. If you are able to stop gap that anger and not express it, after a while you find you can deal with it. That's why we have that advice, when the anger arises, count 1 to 10. That's a very intelligent advice, because you are stop capping that anger. Then you have time to analyze what happened and then you can react with a cool mind. So the first example proved that when it was not in your favor, you were able to hold that anger. When you found that you had something to lose by shouting back, you told your boss, how dare you talk to me like this. Next minute what happened?
Jobless.
But to the child you could go and wall up the floor, the child cannot fire you back, isn't it? So one you had nothing to lose, one you had something to lose, one you had nothing to lose. That means what? There was some amount of thinking involved there. So you can control. Our first policy is to think we cannot control anger. But the real fact is, anger is in our control.
But in this case, the person was suppressing the ego, isn't it? The boss was suppressing the ego.
Ego, right.
And when he went back home, the ego came out.
Because there was no intelligence involved. Once intelligence is involved, we understand this fact that anger is in my control. I should not express it. Whatever I want to do, I hold on. Give that stop gap time. Once you give that stop gap time, you have time to cool down, you have time to think carefully. And you have time to react. You can react later. But not at that point. So, coming back to here, where were we? Karmani bi pravritto bi nitya tripto. Every moment, nitya tripta, such a person is tripta, means constantly contented. Through all his actions, he is constantly contented. Finding favorable, unfavorable, any type of situation in the office, all kinds of different events, objects, he is nitya tripta. And what? Nirasharaya. Nirashraya is very important here. The word Nirashraya means not dependent on anything. Right now we are dependent on an object, dependent on a person, dependent on a certain experience for our happiness. But because that person has found the inner happiness, his dependence is no more external, his dependence is internal. So, external can change anytime. It is not in your control, right? External can change. But if you are not dependent on the external, how can you also be affected? So, nitya tripta nirashraya. And also, what's the other quality given in the first line of verse 20? Karma phala sangam. Karma, you can understand action. Phala is fruit of the action. Asangam tyaktva. Tyaktva means has renounced the attachment to the fruit of the action. That is the life we have to lead as a householder also. Surrender that result also to God. Now, the thing is here, we must be very careful to understand, expectation is one thing. It's not wrong to expect. But where does the problem come? It does not mean that a householder has no goals in life. We must have goals. What do I want to achieve in 10 years, 20 years? I want to study, I want to get a master's, I want to get a promotion. Goals are not wrong. But what is the problem? When the expectation not fulfilled, how do you handle it? Right? So, expectation is not a problem. But when you cannot handle it, that concern, that anxiety, that is the problem. When we keep on constantly worrying, we set our goals, we set our targets, then we put in the plan, we go ahead with the action. And whatever the thing happens, we surrender to God. We don't get disappointed. That's why Krishna said in chapter 2, verse 11, what he said? Na anusochanti pandita. Pandita, the wise person, na anusochanti, does not worry, does not cry. He assesses the situation, thanks God for whatever he has given, and he rises to the challenge. Remember the word fear, what does fear stand for? F-E-A-R?
Face everything and run.
Forget everything and run. That is negative when we look at fear. Forget everything and run. Positive is? Face everything and rise. So, face the challenges. How? Very important. That's why we must have... You see, many of us go to temple, right? And when we go to temple, what do?
Pray.
We pray. When we pray, what do we ask for? Give me good health. May my family be peaceful. May my bank balance always be full. Right? We pray for a lot of positive things. And then we pray that all the negative things be removed. Right? So your mind is constantly focusing on positive and running away from negative. Now just think. Law of karma is perfect. Whatever you are to get, you will get. Whatever is going to happen is going to happen. So by prayer, what are you telling God? Give me this and don't give me that. What are you telling God? Whatever bad I did last time, the karmi, please hold on. Don't give it to me now. Hold on. Take care of it. Whatever good I did, all that you give to me now. Is it possible? But yet we pray. So what happens when negative things happen in our life? What happens? You have constantly gone and psyched yourself now. Good, 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 bad, bad, stay away, bad, bad, stay away, good, good, good. What happens now when something bad happens now? It affects you, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right? Because you have been so scared about the bad things, you've been constantly praying to God, keep that away from me, only give me this good. What happens when the adverse circumstances happen? You can't handle it. So when we go to temple, not that we should not go to temple, we should go to temple, we should pray, we should also ask God for something. What should we ask for?
Strength to face.
God, if whatever is going to come in my life due to my karma, I cannot escape from it, but you be there with me. You give me your shakti to face everything in life. When you have that faith in God, then you can face all those situations in life, because they are going to come. The law of karma is perfect. So instead of praying for all the bad things to be removed, pray for God's strength. Invoke the strength of God in you to be with you, to help you face all the situations. So here also, karma phala sangam. You lay your plans, you have your goals, but invoke the grace of God. Whatever you get, you accept it. You assess the situation, you move on again with that very grace of God. Yatva karma phala sangam. And such a person, naiva kimchit karoti sa. Such a person is karoti sa, is always engaged in work, yet he is unaffected. Through all his actions, through all adverse situations in life, do not affect such a person. So this is the life of a householder here. In the very next verse, verse number 21 here, Krishna will talk about the life of a sannyasi, ashram person. So, a life of a householder is basically this. In fact, how do you define success in life? How would you define, you say this man is very successful. How do you define success in life?
Person who is able to stay calm in every situation.
Success in life is defined by a person who's gone through both unsuccessful and successful, who's handled unsuccessful situations and successful situations, isn't it? A successful person also had to go through all kinds of unsuccessful situations, and he managed to handle and overcome and became successful. It is not overnight. So a success is defined by successful person is defined by someone who has overcome both unsuccessful and successful condition. That's why a businessman was asked, sir, a rich businessman, a successful businessman was asked, sir, by a reporter, what is the secret of your success? And he said three words. So what are the three words? Tell us the secret of your success. He said, making right decisions. These are the three words. So the reporter said, but what is the success of making right decisions? Tell us that. What is the success of making right decisions? He said, one word. What is that word? Experience. Okay, what is the success of that experience? He said three words. What are the three words? Making wrong decisions. Making wrong decisions led to experience. Experience led to making right decisions. Isn't it? It is not overnight. So success here, one who is ever engaged in work and is able to meet all challenges doesn't mean that person will not meet unsuccessful. He will meet unsuccessful events in his life, but he knows with the grace of God, with the strength in him, invoked by God, how he can also progress. So now, what about the life of a sannyasi here? I'll just briefly, we're going to finish in about 1 or 2 minutes, so I'll just briefly touch on this verse here. Here it says, in verse 21, is a lifestyle of a person who has given up the household and is staying in ashram. What is the lifestyle of the person? Look at the second line, verse number 21. Tyakta sarva parigraha. Tyakta, having renounced, sarva all, parigraha means possessions. One who has given up all possessions. So not only objects, but also relationships. When we talk about possessions, we are talking not only about objects, but even cut off all, relationships. Okay? And what else? Nirashi. Nirashi also means all types of relations, meaning after having given up, you see, it's very easy to just give up, but what happens? Physically, it's easy to give up, but mentally also you have to give up. So it is not just physically giving up relationships and possession, means we should not also hanker or feel, Ulama, what I gave up, I gave up a nice car, I gave up a nice house, all this. That feeling also must not be there. So it's not only physically giving up. Lately, I don't know whether you read in the Times of India, a rich businessman worth 600 million in Gujarat, a giant businessman. He has renounced everything and taken up sannyas. It was in the Times of India, front page. His business empire is worth $600 million. And he just gave up everything and took sannyas. He joined an ashram. There are some 100 monks staying there. So this is a giant way of doing it. They reach a certain stage where they just give up everything. He gave up all his attachment to his family, connections with his family, his possession, everything he gave away to become a very realized person. He's in his 50s, not even old, 50s. So nirashi means one who does not anchor. After giving up, he still does not feel that I am lacking something. I had all that, I gave it up and I am still thinking about it. So he's given up everything. The third quality is that, in the first line, yatta chitta atma. So chitta here means mind. Atma here means body, because you must be careful. In this, the word atma can mean many things. So in this context, chitta means mind, atma means body. So, yatta means one who has control or discipline his body and his mind. One who is in full control of his mind and his body. So, both mental and physical fitness also is there. One is prepared to face any discomforts. Because when you go to an ashram, you don't have a proper bed to sleep. Right? You might not have food to eat. You might have only one meal to eat. And you cannot choose. You cannot say, I want this, I want that, whatever is given to you, you accept, you eat. So, chitta atma, that is very important. You must have an integrated discipline, body and mind also. So, what does this person do now? He's got nothing to do. He goes to an ashram. He's got no duties, no responsibilities, right? No investment in stock market. Doesn't have to decide what to wear for party tonight. No, nothing, no commitment. So, what does he do then? What does he do? Such a person. What is his very basic duty here is given in the third line. Sariram kevalam karma. Kevalam karma kurvan. He does not have family, he does not have possession, he does not have responsibilities. Minimum he has got to take care of his body, shariram. At least have some food to eat, have some water to drink, have adequate sleep and have some exercise and recreation. So minimum action he has to do is to just maintain his body. He has no more desires beyond that. His only main desire is to just maintain that healthy body. Why? So that he can carry on all his sadhanas, prayers, rituals, prayers, meditation, and he can use this body. If you have a healthy body, you can use it to serve others. Otherwise, you yourself are in an unhealthy situation. How can you even serve society also? So I maintain my body for only two purposes, so I can do my sadhana and I can also use this body to serve others. So even therefore when he goes for begging also, right? You know what is the, you see in these movies they show the sages when they go for begging, what do they say? Bhavati Bhiksha Dehi, right? You see that they go house to house, they stand in front of the house with their pot and then they say Bhavati Bhiksha Dehi, give me whatever Bhiksha. They don't say Bhavati Dosa Dehi, Bhavati Panir Dehi. What they say? Bhavati Bhiksha Dehi means whatever you put there, I accept as prasadam. So that must be the attitude. If you have cultivated that attitude, then you can go and live in the ashram. Otherwise, you want hot chapati every day, you want dosa and idli every day, then sorry, you don't know what you get. So such is the person's mind. And what happens, he says here, kilbisham na apnoti. Na apnoti means he does not incur kilbisham. Kilbisham here means sin. So what is sin again? Such a person living an integrated life, accepting whatever he gets, giving up all his possessions, does not incur sin means what? Does not incur any punyam papa. Sin is basically nothing but a barrier to our spiritual growth. That is punyam and papam. Because if you have papam, you have to come back and take another birth. If you have punyam, you also have to come back and take another birth. Because you have to exhaust all the punyam and papam. Now, I'll just close with 2 minutes. What is the advantage, therefore, of a griha sannyasi? Now, we have compared a householder sannyasi and an ashram sannyasi. What is the advantage of a griha sannyasi? There are advantages and there are disadvantages. What is the advantage? No, for a householder. What are the benefits? What are the advantages? Compared to a ashram sannyasi. True. But most important is security is there. There is money. There are friends. There is family. There is somebody you can depend on. Right? There is security. So, comforts are there. Security is there. Right? And even if you are a rich businessman, you know after you go away, you can, your children will carry on the business. There is some form of security. But what is the disadvantage? There are so many other challenges. You have to build up your empire also. There are many challenges along the way. There is a lot of work to be done. There is a lot of ups and downs in life also. So advantage is security. Disadvantage is there are a lot of challenges. For a sannyasi, what is the advantage? No spouse, no children, what money to invest in stock market, all that, not there. But what is the biggest disadvantage? The biggest disadvantage is there is no security, isn't it? There is no money. There is nothing. You have nothing at all. You have given up everything. Correct. So, when he has no security, he has got to have that much of faith and dependence on God that you will provide for me everything. That much of surrender must be there. Because you don't have security to depend on. You don't have any money. Right? Whatever few dollars, you know, sannyasis come, they give lecture. Whatever people give, 2 ringgit, 3 ringgit. At the most, they collect back 50 or 100 ringgit and go back. That's all. In fact, today I attended a talk. The Brahmachari was telling us that we are giving Guru Dakshina. to, after the talk, it is natural to give some guru dakshina to the guru. But he was telling us, what do they use the money for? They don't use it for themselves. They collect the money and they give it to the ashram to be used for the benefit of others. So the guru dakshina is not for the guru, it is for the benefit of others. But such a person has no security, so he must have that much of faith in God that whatever things will be provided for. So both have advantages and disadvantages, and that's why we have to consider very carefully which ashrama suits us the most. We come back next week. We will discuss from verse number 22. End with the prayer.
Vasudeva sutam devam kansa chanura mardanam deva.